We're back with Mediocrity, episode 7, S-E, number 7, E-N. We had so much planned for today, but something happened. I don't know, but we have a good show today. I'm Brian Kluger, I'm with Jonathan Atterbury.
I'm here.
How are you?
I'm great.
I'm here. He's got a Star Wars shirt on, as usual. Usually something with that.
Yep.
And we've got Jeremy Magert with the Texas Ranger muscle shirt. He's showing off them beautiful muscles. You got a haircut. You got the beard done. You look nice. You clean up well.
I got the haircut for Comic-Con, but the beard didn't get done.
Because you're going to be at Comic-Con.
The beard just does what the beard does. Yes, I will be at the Dallas Comic Show this weekend.
What times can people come see you?
I believe the show is 11 to 7 on Saturday, and I think it's like 11 to 5 on Sunday.
All right. So you'll be there the whole time. You have a booth. You're debuting Primal Instinct.
That's correct. I will have special printing, black and white copy of Primal Instinct number 1.
Hardcore.
Yes.
Are you posing for photos?
I will.
You will?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you charge?
That's free.
Oh, it's free?
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Bonus content.
Bonus content.
That's right.
Go see Jeremy Magert at the Richardson Civic Center, right?
That's correct.
I'll be here. Tell him that you like Mediocrity and his new book, Primal Instinct.
That too, I guess.
Yes, and that. It's a launch party. It's awesome. It's Battlestar Galactica meets Jurassic Park. Who doesn't want to read that, right?
I know.
Look at the beautiful artwork. And then Jonathan Atterbury, you're... should I call you Jonathan Michael or Jonathan Atterbury? What do I call you?
Jonathan Atterbury.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Because you're different on Facebook, so I don't know what to call you.
It's all right. We'll just go with Jonathan Atterbury.
Jonathan Atterbury. Okay. And you've got the new American Fitness thing going on. You said you wrote a new article this week for it.
I did. I wrote a new article. It's called Eat, Drink, and Lift Like a Norse God.
Like a Norse god.
Like a Norse god.
So kind of like Thor?
Yeah, that's exactly like it.
Okay.
So the whole point of the article was taking aim at people who want to be healthier and stronger and a little bit fitter, you know, without making diet and exercise like a main stressful component of their life. Just simple tricks that anyone can incorporate into their daily life that will help them be stronger and feel better and perform better.
Can we fly like Thor into the thunder?
You can jump.
Okay, cool.
And pretend you're flying.
You can throw the hammer that hard.
Yeah.
I swing that hammer hard, sir.
I know you do.
Oh, good.
And I've actually already set up a discount code for everyone that's listening to the Mediocrity podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I do online coaching. That's part of the stuff that I do on my website, newamericanfitness.net. And I set up a discount code for anyone that's interested in doing the online coaching. You can check it out. You'll get 50% off any online package that you choose. And the code is media-ocrity-august. That's simple.
Mediocrity August with the dashes in between.
Exactly.
Do you spell the dash?
No.
Well, that sounds good. That's how you get a discount code. You get to healthier lifestyle. You get to look like Thor.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Does a free hammer come included?
No, sadly.
We're mediocre.
It's the discount package.
It's the discount.
You take that 50% you save and you go buy the hammer.
Exactly.
Okay, good,
you
good.
You buy a few hammers.
A few hammers. Well, go see him and go see Jeremy at the Richardson Civic Center at the Dallas Comic Show this weekend. But this is episode 7. We've survived 7 weeks. And we were going to recast a movie today, which was your idea, John Nathan.
It was going to be great.
Yeah.
We were going to recast 7, the movie 7, with Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, and Arlie Ermey, and Kevin Spacey.
As a celebration.
Of our 7th episode. But what happened?
We fucking forgot.
Today I texted these wieners over here. I was like, so we're still doing the 7 recasting? And we were all like, we forgot.
We forgot. So in honor in our tradition of being mediocre, we're okay.
We forgot.
We're going to recast 7 on episode 8. We're just a week behind here.
It no longer makes sense, but it'll still be fun.
It'll be good. Maybe we can recast Jennifer 8. Was that a movie? No? Yes? Buffalo 8? 8 seconds. We're recasting 8 seconds.
How about 8 heads in a duffel bag?
8 heads in a duffel bag. Just Joe Kevin eight. Hart as Joe Pesci.
8 millimeter.
8 millimeter.
8 mile.
8 mile. Good God, sirs. Good God, who would we recast in 8 mile?
As Eminem?
Yes.
Just Vanilla Ice.
Just Vanilla Ice?
Yeah.
From the wrong side of the streets of Plano.
Exactly.
Robbie Van Winkle.
Just power everybody down and go with Drake. Oh.
Justin Bieber?
I just don't even want to think about it. I just don't want to think about it.
Nobody likes 8 Mile anyways, right?
If he had AIDS and, like, tuberculosis and just ate him up, I would like it. I'm sorry, Justin Bieber. We actually love you. Not really. But we were going to make it up to you on the podcast on the 7th episode where we're still alive. We're still here. We haven't been canceled yet, which who would cancel us?
It's free. So.
It's free. So we're glad you're listening to our iTunes account. Please subscribe to us. Find us on Twitter at @media_Ocrity and on Facebook at @MediaOcrity. But we're going to make it up to you because we're going to discuss the best sex scenes in movies.
Ooh, it's time to get sexy with
We're going to get naked for this.
We are naked. Well, I'm naked.
Well, I'm not yet because I just got here. But I'm going to get naked. I'm just going to put it all on the table. And I mean literally
all
everything.
All 2 inches of it.
All 2 inches of Texas tradition. And we're also going to talk about Star Trek. We're going to talk about movie monsters. We're going to make it up to you. But if you've listened to our show before, you know that we're big fans of Star Wars. We like Star Wars, but we haven't really talked about Star Trek other than the past movie. We want to get into the Star Trek. We want to talk about what the best captains were, what the best shows were, movies and whatnot. Because I know y'all like Star Trek, but you're more Star Wars people. But I'm sure you know Star Trek stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
So let's get into the Star Trek. For those of you listening with Star Trek stuff, I would like to say that most people know all the Star Trek universes, but I would say most people know, like, maybe Next Generation, the later movies, and, of course, these last 3 films. But in reality, there was an original series back long ago with William Shatner. And then right after that, yeah, and Leonard Nimoy, it was awesome. It was only on for, like, was it a season or two? And it was good. It was campy. It was goodness. And then right after that, there was an animated series, which nobody really saw. It was only on for a season or two. And then people started in, like, the 80s and 90s, The Next Generation with Patrick Stewart.
Then all the spinoffs and different things like Voyager.
You had Deep Space Nine. You had Voyager. You had Enterprise. And then you have the upcoming Discovery one, which is coming up next year.
I'm excited about that.
I'm really excited about it. But I'd like to talk about... we all know the original series. It was campy. The animated series was campy. But then you have Deep Space Nine, which was really cool because it took place when I'm reading my notes right here because I can't remember everybody's name, but it took place on a space station rather than the USS Enterprise. I thought that was cool. And you had the Black Commander, Avery Brooks, who played the commanding officer, Benjamin Sisko. Did y'all remember watching Deep Space Nine?
I have not watched Deep Space
You've
Nine.
You've never watched Deep Space Nine, have you? Mm-hmm. No? I liked it because it took place on the space station and not the Enterprise. And it was kind of cool to see, like, the commanding officer in him, because it took place after all of this and after Next Generation,
right,
of how they kind of not went to worlds, but they kind of, like, were the Federation trying dealing with politics and everything. Mm-hmm. It was really cool to see that. Because it was a cool space station. It was, like, a really big space station, kind of like in the last movie, if you've seen it. And then you had Voyager with, of course, the female captain, Kate Mulgrew,
mm-hmm,
Captain Janeway, who was really hot. And she was really cool. That one, if you remember, which was Voyager, they were out in space, like at the edge of the Milky Way galaxy, and they had to go discover some, like, distress call of an alien terrorist ship. And then they got stranded out there, and it was going to take them, like, 75 years to get back to Earth. So that was where that whole series kind of took place.
And for those that don't know who Kate Mulgrew is off the top of your head, if you're a fan of Orange is the New Black, then you're talking about Red.
Yeah, she was the captain of the USS Voyager. That was what
it
was called.
And she's
great
in both roles.
She is, and she was, like, you would not almost recognize her because she kind of had longer hair back then, and she,
and she was 25 years younger.
Yeah, she was 25 years old. She had an excellent, excellent chest that stuck through those spandex Star Trek. I mean, it was always, she's always great eye candy. You know what? For what she is, she still is. She's amazing. And I mean, it's amazing that she has that accent on the show of Orange is the New Black.
Yep.
And just, it's totally two different characters, but you can see she's a leader. And she was really cool. And then, of course, you have Enterprise, which was a weird one out of the bunch because it was a prequel to the original series with Scott Bakula. Scott Bakula.
Not Scott Blackula.
Did I say Blackula? Not the black vampire of the blaxploitation movies. Scott Bakula. And it followed the first Enterprise. Hey, Scott Blackula.
It's mediocre.
It is mediocre.
It's living up to the name right there with that.
I would like a movie called Scott Blackula where Scott Bakula plays Blackula.
Scott Blackula. I would love that too. But it follows the first Enterprise, like the first one, and he plays Captain Jonathan Archer. And like, again, this is a prequel to the original series before Captain Kirk. So it goes way back. And this was when this captain who Scott Bakula plays, that he did not, nobody liked Vulcans because the Vulcans always kept the technology secrets away from everybody. It wasn't until later that they started becoming friends. So it was cool to see that. And it was, they were all on for several seasons. And I mean, it just spawned a huge, just cult phenomenon. Plus like 10 movies plus 3 more that are recent. What movies do y'all like the best? Do y'all like the new ones? Do you like the old ones?
I think my favorite Star Trek movie is First Contact.
First Contact. Really?
Me yeah, too. Absolutely.
My mouth is open yeah, right Brian's, now.
We have dropped his jaw.
And my nuts.
I told you it would happen eventually.
So why, yeah, it finally did. Why First Contact and not Wrath of Khan?
Well, I don't like Wrath of Khan very much. It's okay. But I'm not a huge fan of the original series or Shatner or any of that. It's okay. It's all okay. You know what I mean? For what, it's like the Batman series.
I can't believe what I'm hearing right now.
Yeah, well, you know.
So you don't like Wrath of Khan? That's like the best one.
I disagree.
So, about First Contact, you and you. Why First Contact?
Well, first of all, I'm a huge... I am the next generation dude, as far as Star Trek is concerned. That is the apex of Star Trekosity in my
book. So, between Kirk and Stewart, you're... I mean, Kirk and Picard, you're...
I'm a Picard man. Okay. Yes, big time.
Okay.
And so, I just like... And I think that movie... Because that was the one that was directed by...
A lot of them were directed by Leonard Nimoy, but
no, the first contact one, that was when, I forget, Jonathan Frakes.
Right.
That was
yes.
when he started, I think he directed
right.
that one.
Yes.
And
yes,
so there was a lot of, too. Yeah, a lot of passion behind it there. Like what we were talking about a few episodes ago about how when you give people that are really love the content, give them the creative control, it just turns out better. Mm-hmm. I think this was a good example of that.
Okay. What about you, Jeremy? I'm curious.
I agree with him 100% on that. And also, I feel like one of the reasons why I enjoy that movie is, you know, when you watch a lot of the TV show, part of what you get to enjoy is you see how Data kind of evolves and progresses. And that movie is a really big storyline in terms of him and his goals for, you know, always kind of striving to be more human and everything that happens to him, like at the hands of the Borg. I feel like that's a really good movie.
And we got to see like a muscle-shirted Patrick Stewart, like,
which was super impressive.
Yeah, and he was like ripped.
He got in great shape for that movie.
That was a really cool movie because the Borg, that chick who played the Borg, the makeup was impressive.
Oh yeah,
and she was just a really cool villain.
I remember when that movie came out. I was probably 10 years old, 12 years old, something like that. And I remember being very impressed by that.
And it's, to me, it's one of the ones that even as time passes, it holds up well too.
Yeah,
no, there are a lot of those that you know, you go back and watch the TV show or some of the old movies, and it's
like Wrath of Khan,
you know, and it can be a little rough.
Really, Wrath of Khan, I think, is still hardcore.
First Contact holds up for me.
Yeah, I agree.
So, in First Contact, so is your favorite villain the Borg, or would it be a Romulan?
I would say the Borg is the most compelling villain in the Star Trek universe,
because they're hard to kill for real.
Yeah, and they're just, you know, they're scary.
They are scary looking because they're actually people like you and me, but they get transformed into these like sentient robot humans.
Yeah, and then have your kind of soul sucked out to a certain extent. Yeah, because you're else in control of your body. It's scary.
Yeah, like there's like one big supercomputer that controls all of you.
Yeah.
And then what's so cool about the Borg, for people who don't know really Star Trek, is that they adapt very quickly to everything. So if one Borg gets, if one or two Borgs get shot with a gun, then they all update like a computer, and they are no longer susceptible to bullet wounds. That you cannot kill them with a bullet. You have to find some other means. So it's really difficult to kill them. But Captain Picard found a way.
Yep.
Now, was Dr. Wesley Crusher in that one? I'm trying to remember.
I don't believe he was.
Well, you mean
Will Wheaton?
Yeah, I think he was not in that movie.
Was Whoopi Goldberg in that one?
I don't remember, honestly, off the top of my head.
I'm trying to remember, because there's a great scene in one of the Star Trek movies where Captain Picard is doing like that virtual reality thing where you can, you know, set up
the holodeck.
The holodeck, and something came in, and he was in a white tux with a machine gun blowing down people.
That was that movie, but that was not Whoopi Goldberg.
Okay, well, I get them confused.
Patrick Stewart and Whoopi Goldberg. It's understandable.
It's understandable, but I was trying to remember, because I know Whoopi was a big, you know, asset to Star Trek.
Oh yeah, Next Generation.
Yes. So, but yeah, I know I like that movie too, and I think it was the one before that, Generations, where you had Kirk and Picard in the same movie, and you had the villain was Malcolm McDowell from A Clockwork Orange, and that was a really cool storyline too, and I like that one. So do y'all like the Save the Whales Star Trek one? I think that was 3 or 4.
Not so much. Like I said, the original series, all of that stuff I can do without. I don't really like any of it.
And First Contact was also the one where you had James Cromwell on the planet, and he was the one that was going to develop the super drive.
Right.
Right, yeah. That was so amazing, because I'm trying to remember, was it, they listened to Magic Carpet Ride by Steppenwolf. And you had Geordi and Jonathan Frakes' character down on like the kind of human-esque Earth.
Yeah.
That was so good. That was so fun, because they're about to take off and they start playing the Steppenwolf.
And I feel like that scene really does a great job of capturing the essence of what, you know, of what Star Trek, which is supposed to be about, you know, less about space battles and action and more about exploration. And I feel like they did a great job in that scene of really capturing the, you know, the kind of excitement and thrill of, you know, what basically is the beginning of humanity's exploration into space with that moment.
Yeah, I agree. And I like the philosophical aspect that they were able to adapt more in the Next Generation series. Granted, the original series was trying to do that, but they were so constrained by the censors of the time.
Well, that and technology and all of that.
Exactly.
But I also think that Star Trek was very ahead of its time before even Star Wars. I think Star Trek's still
ahead
of the time right now with, you know, having female captains and, you know,
interracial relationships, all that stuff. They were trailblazers, no doubt.
I mean, not only was Captain Kirk getting green, you know, pussy everywhere. But,
you know, you pussy.
Pussy. Green at that. But, yeah, I mean, Picard never did that, really. I mean, he had some relationships, but it wasn't like Captain Kirk at all.
Well, he was not as smooth and suave as Kirk was. But
Which is funny, because I think Picard or Stewart is more is smoother than Shatner.
No doubt.
He has that
depends
voice.
How many drinks Shatner's had, I think, actually.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, in preparation for this new show that's coming out, I can't believe they're finally doing a TV show. This new show called Discovery is going to be set in this current timeline that we're in with the movies. There's not going to, you know, the actors are not from the movies are not going to be in there, but it's going to be in that same timeline. And supposedly it's going to be them discovering new planets and whatnot, which I think is cool.
Have we found out what outlet it's going to be on yet? Is it going to be Netflix?
So CBS.
Oh.
But from what I know, they're going to air the first episode on CBS, but then it's going to be like an online thing, which is weird. Because
they're going to set up like their own like kind of Netflix-y thing where you pay like a... But supposedly it's going to be less expensive. It's going to be like $1 or $2 a month, and the first episode will be on TV, and all the other episodes will be on that streaming service.
Gotcha.
Which sounds weird, because I would like to see it on TV, but if I can get the app on like Apple TV or something like that, perfect. I'd do it, and I would pay for it.
Yeah, because I think especially if they're able to have a little bit more freedom, creative freedom, than if they're limited by being on network.
So I know you like Star Wars more than Star Trek. What drives you to Star Wars more than Star Trek? I'm just curious because I like Star Trek more than Star Wars, because I like Star Trek because, I mean, I know Star Wars has different worlds, but I like, I guess I like the crews better. I like the Enterprise. I like the whole feel because I think it's more science and whatnot, not as fantastical as Star Wars. But I mean, that's just me. But what do y'all think?
Well, Star Wars has Jedi, and Star Wars has Han Solo.
Oh, good answer.
So lightsabers.
What, photons, though?
Yeah, no, lightsabers are way cooler.
Really?
Yeah. Okay,
so, yeah, lightsabers are pretty
awesome.
It
depends. You know, to me, when I watch Star Trek, I feel like I'm watching something that's science fiction, and opposed when I watch Star Wars, and that's a more, like, science fantasy.
Okay.
So, to me, just they're a little bit different genres. And, you know, I feel like one area where Star Trek, you know, can beat Star Wars is when you have TV shows and movies, you know, especially when you have something like a TV show where you're going to get, I don't know how many issues or episodes where you get a TV show.
Yeah.
But you can have such a bigger cast, and you can spend so much more time with characters on a TV show than you can when you get a 2-hour movie every 3 years.
At best.
Well, so that's why Star Wars having all the animated series, you get so many different characters. And then in Star Trek, you have all these television shows.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're not reboots of a reboot, you get to see, like, the past ships or the future ships or what happened after that.
Star Trek wins in that regard.
Yeah. Like, you know, you get to see, you know, you get to spend time with, you know, the Geordies and all, like the engineer guys. I mean, you have no
idea. The B-cast.
You have no idea who the engineer is on fucking Akbar's Mon Calamari. You know, when you say that, and that's the reaction that you get, because, like, no one cares.
Yep.
But that's what makes Star Trek neat. You know, you get to spend time with those guys.
Yeah, I like that, too. It's... Have you all seen the latest Star Trek movie?
Mm-mm.
Not yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
Not yet. But you all like the last two, right?
I did not like the second one.
Yeah, I didn't like the first one either.
The first one was good.
Okay, all right. I like the third one. And still, I'm still Wrath of Khan all the way. I love First Contact, though. I mean, just talking about that makes me want to go watch that again. Because it's so much fun to watch. And James Cromwell and Patrick Stewart Borgs. It's so good. And yes, there was a Star Trek movie that was basically about Save the Whales at the time of Save the Whales in America. It was really funny. But yeah, that's Star Trek. I think, I love Captain Janeway. I loved, Kate Mulgrew was great. As you might be my favorite captain, minus Kirk and Picard. I think that's where I'm going with. And then.
So she's your favorite, but she's actually your third favorite.
Correct. I guess. Yeah. I mean, Picard and Shatner are in a league of their own. So if I had to not choose
them...
They're
really too badass to count and put on a list, but I'm kidding.
I mean, really? Do you disagree?
Well, who are you saying is your favorite? I'm very confused.
If I'm not mentioning Kirk or Picard...
No, if you are. You can't not mention them.
You can't stop Trek and not mention them.
Shatner.
Okay.
Shatner.
Captain Kirk all the way.
Yeah, the old... Not Chris Pine, which I like Chris Pine, but it's the... Yeah.
Right.
He was awesome. He just... He did his thing. He did his own thing. And he was funny. He liked to hook up and party. But he got things done. And he was serious when it had to be. I like him. He had an adventure.
He did.
And I like Picard. But he's very noble. You know, I feel like you just couldn't have a drink with him and play Eyes Wide Shut. I don't know. With Captain Kirk, you can. Do you agree or no?
You didn't see the episode of Next Generation when Captain Picard went to the pleasure planet.
Yes, I do remember that. The pleasure planet.
That outfit was hilarious.
Exactly. He rocks a kimono.
Oh, Star Trek, we miss you. We're glad you're coming back. We're glad you're back in the movies. We're glad you're back on Blu-ray. It's the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. I can't believe it's been around for 50 years.
That Captain's documentary was awesome.
Yeah, they do a good job because they have so much to derive from. And then all the fans that have written fan fiction for it and all the conventions, it's crazy. So we're big Star Trek fans here and Star Wars fans. That's why we like to talk about it. Who would win in a fight, Han Solo or Captain Picard?
Well, it depends on what we're talking about. If we're talking about a fight, I think Han Solo is probably going to win.
Really?
If we're talking about like a fist fight.
Yeah?
Come on.
Really?
Yeah.
You think so, too?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Why?
Because Han Solo is much, much cooler.
Who has the cooler ship, the USS Enterprise or the Millennium Falcon?
The Falcon.
The Falcon?
Yeah, because the Enterprise gets blown up all the fucking time.
That's true. Every movie, every show is basically something happens.
The Falcon is still
Falcon
in one
the
piece.
The last movie is old as fuck by that point. Basically crashes through those trees, slams into the side of the mountain, and it's just
still fine. It's still
built
fine.
To last.
Yeah. Doesn't like a look like from much, the 50s. But got it where it counts.
That's true. That's true. They both have hyperdrives.
Yep.
Oh. I mean, it is a cool ship. The Millennium Falcon is a cool ship.
Don't start talking.
Why?
Because.
I'm going to get you angry.
I'm going to leave this show.
I will leave this show.
The next sound will be John inserting that microphone into Brian's anus.
So, really, so you're just, that's the coolest ship to you. Is it Millennium Falcon?
Yeah.
Not even the Serenity, not a USS Enterprise.
Correct.
Ooh, maybe eventually we need to rank science fiction ships.
Yes.
Maybe we'll do that on episode 8.
Yeah.
Apparently I've given away my answer already. So, spoiler.
Okay, so we'll make a rule. You can't say Millennium Falcon.
You and these rules.
You and these rules. I break your rules. I crush you. So we'll move on. We'll move on. Let's save the sex for last.
Oh, we don't want the climax?
We don't want to blow our load just yet. But let's go on to movie monsters. Let's talk about movie monsters.
Let's
talk about movie monsters. When we talk about movie monsters, we're going to be very general and open here, because we're going to go all the way back to the 20s and 30s, where you had...
Going all the way back.
The Mummy, the universal monsters like Frankenstein and Wolfman and Dracula and the Creature from the Black Lagoon. Those really kind of started, you know, the movie monsters. I mean, those were the horror movies of that time. You go back and watch them and they're still really good, but, you know, they don't... pack scares, really,
right?
Like they do now. Because
unless you're a really small child, I remember watching those movies with my dad when I was like 6 or something, and they were creepy to me.
I think they still have creepy aspects to them, but yeah. I think audiences change as times have changed. And
no doubt, they're not scary to adults now.
Correct. But I think that's where a lot of people derive their monsters from, and because I mean. Wolfman always scared me just because the thought of somebody just turning into a wild beast werewolf kill you. That was scary to me. Because it's kind of like the Shining syndrome where somebody you know, you love, can just turn into something like that.
Right.
You know, over time. So that it's always cool. It's spawned... I mean, all these monsters have spawned so many spin-offs.
Well, yeah, no doubt. I mean, those were the original monster movies.
So out of these universal monsters, you know, you have... The Phantom of the Opera, Dr. Jekyll, Dracula, Wolfman, Creature from the Black Lagoon. What always stood out to you guys?
Definitely the Wolfman for me.
Wolfman for me? For the same reason as like, or just?
Wolfman probably for me because, like John, I used to watch those movies like with my dad, like I'm going to say, like on a Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think those either like kind of like after Saturday morning cartoons where they would show like classic monster movies and... I just remember watching them then, and there just was always something about, specifically like the Wolfman that I just always thought was cool.
No, it was cool. And you?
I agree. The Wolfman all the way. They were all good, but I think the Wolfman was the most compelling to me.
It was cool because there was only one way to kill him, and it was silver.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cool in the movie Monster Squad in the 80s. I know I bring that up as silly but fun, but there's a question is like, how do you kill a werewolf? And... like, is it old age could kill a werewolf? Is it a power tool? You know, it's funny. But
angina?
Like, angina? Angina's tough. But, I mean, it's only silver, but with, you know, with something like Dracula, there's sunlight, which is just prevalent everywhere. And then you have, I mean, could be garlic, could be holy water, could be a wooden stake through the heart. There's several ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with Creature with the Black Lagoon or Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde or Phantom of the Opera, they're just normal. Or the Mummy, you know, which is a cool, you know, historical thing in itself of the Mummy. Just even you just have this old decrepit bone guy walking around.
Right.
How easy is that to take care of? But with Wolfman, it was literally like you could do anything. You can like sever every limb of his body, drain his blood, and he would still come back if you didn't do it with silver. It's really cool.
It is cool. And those movies just had their such a unique feel, the Wolfman movies. You know, it felt different than the rest of them.
Yeah.
Because they had a little bit more of like... being in the woods with the fog and the gypsy lady and all that stuff. That was fun.
It was cool. And then you got into, like, the 40s and the 50s were kind of like the disco, like, 50s nuclear war stuff. And that's when we first became into the Blob, you know, original with Steve McQueen. And you just have this giant jelly thing just overtaking you. Had no... It's like basically Jell-O pudding coming at you.
It sounds fun, but
they remade it in the 80s with Johnny Drama from Entourage. But, you know, they had all those. And I remember in the 50s or whatever, their marketing was like, people have had heart attacks in the theaters, you know, consult your doctor before seeing this movie. You know, it was like those good marketing.
Yeah, and around that time, I think a lot of the stuff was focused, like you said, on nuclear reactions and things like that. So that's how it created them, right? The ants that were coming out of the sewer and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really cool to see stuff like that. And in the 60s and 70s, you have Invasions of the Body Snatchers and stuff like that. And which was always good, you know, the government, you know, there's these things taking over your mind. And then you had the exorcisms. And then towards the late 70s, the horror genre changed with the slashers.
Oh, yeah. It got turned on its head.
It did. The slashers and Jason, Friday the 13th. I mean, well, it was his mother. Mrs. Voorhees was the original killer, but spawned 12 sequels.
And then we Jason, got Halloween.
Nightmare on Elm Street. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre, yeah. Leatherface. There's these... just tons of slasher movies that had like supernatural abilities to them. So I gotta ask, out of these slashers, out of these iconic movie monsters, who's your go-to favorite?
The favorite of the slashers?
Yeah, the slashers. Like, you talk about Leatherface, you're talking about Jason, you're talking about Mike Myers, you're talking about Freddy.
That's tough. I think if I'm going to go with the scariest one, I'll say Leatherface.
Okay.
I think Leatherface was the scariest of the slashers to me, but I think my favorite's got to be Freddy Krueger.
Okay.
Because he's cool. Just so much fun.
Well, my favorite is always Freddy because he is damn scary. He's in the dreams and he can go in the real world, but he's also so fucking funny.
Yeah.
He is the best one-liners. He just plays with you and then he kills you. It's so good. Jeremy, what about you?
I'm exactly the same.
Freddy?
Yep. Just the scars on the face and then just like his kind of gangly body and then the, you know, the sweater and the hat and the glove.
So
like,
iconic.
The glove. To me, the glove is one of the most iconic horror things ever.
It is. It's the finger knives. They are so scary because it doesn't seem like, you know, this leather glove with these knives on him that he created in his basement before he actually died. It was just, it's so crazy because he scratched them on chalkboards and on walls. And it made that, like, that cringing sound. And it was so scary. And then he would appear in your dreams and you would see your best friend's body just being picked up on the wall and blood everywhere or goats running around and then the two girls singing on the jump rope. Damn scary.
Good stuff.
I'm kind of surprised yours wasn't Michael Myers.
So I want to talk about Mike Myers and Jason. So Mike Myers is actually really scary if you think about it because...
Is it Mike Myers or is it Michael Myers? I think Mike Myers is different. I think that's what the...
Okay, so it's Michael Myers. It's Michael
right.
Myers. Not Mike Myers, the actor. It's Michael Myers.
Which then spawned off into the Austin Powers.
They're the same person. So Michael Myers, by the amazing John Carpenter. What was scary about that character was that we saw him... The very first scene you see is this little kid who's like 8 years old. And he puts on a clown mask and he kills for no reason. He's silent. There's nothing to it. But then throughout the whole, all of the movies that were spawned after that, they really never get to the source of his evil, which was really cool because he's like, he's just evil from not a human evil. He is something from hell.
Fun fact for you guys. So the first victim of Michael Myers, his older sister, the one when she's brushing her hair and calling to Michael and he stabs her.
Yeah.
That's my father's first wife.
That's your father's first wife?
Yeah, exactly.
His
ex-wife, yep.
Really?
That is her.
So do you talk to her?
Well, no, no.
No.
Never met her or anything, but just a fun connection there.
That is a great connection. I gotta watch that now. I'm gonna text you. That's really cool. That's awesome. I'm very excited about it. I love trivia like that. I really do. That's I'm sidetracked now. I just want totally to
totally starstruck.
That. I am. Jonathan Atterbury's here. He once knew the first. That's really cool. But going back to Michael Myers, I think in part six, which was the one with a very young Paul Rudd, they kind of tried to go in that route of explaining his evil. But that's what I thought was so cool, is that they never explained where his evil came from.
Right.
And it was always quiet, so you never knew anything about it.
Just mysterious evil
shit. He was, and he always came back, just like Jason. Jason, we had know, was, you know, a normal kid, more or less. He just looked funny, and he drowned because the camp counselors were assholes having sex with each other. And his mother really fucked him up to kill everybody. But now, there's something evil in him from hell or something, because he keeps coming back no matter what you do to him. But I still think Jason has a human side to him.
Yeah.
More than Mike Myers or Freddy, because Freddy's just plain ass.
Evil incarnate.
Yeah, he really is. Because it's always implied in the Nightmare on Elm Street movies that he was a child molester and child killer. But I don't think Jason was ever like that. And Mike Myers just seemed that he had that whole supernatural thing to him from the get-go. And then you say Leatherface is so scary. And I think Leatherface is scary because he's also part of that family.
Right.
The whole family's insane.
Yes. And it's scarier because that's more realistic.
Well, it was all based off of, you know, Ed Gein.
Yeah.
And real serial killers like that.
And we don't know exactly what Ed Gein was doing, but he was doing some really creepy stuff.
Well, I mean, he made furniture out of the bones. Masks.
As far as I know about him, there's been some speculation as to whether it was from victims that he was killing or if he was just grave robbing and taking these bodies.
Both.
He claims that it was all people he killed, but they also found there was some people that had died of natural causes.
Right, yeah. But yeah, he also wore the faces of people because Buffalo Bill and Hannibal Lecter were also based on Ed Gein.
Yeah, he made pants, I believe.
Right.
That was what he made specifically. It was like lampshades and stuff like that, but specifically a pair of pants out of human flesh.
But what's so cool about Leatherface as opposed to, you know, the grandfather or the hitchhiker, Leatherface was just, he was quiet, he was a big guy, and he used that chainsaw and he chased after you, and he didn't seem to like phase him.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, they spawned sequels after him too. They've made reboots after reboots, and he's just still a really cool character.
Yeah.
So Freddy, for you, do you like the Leatherface? Do you like the Jason? Do you like the Michael Myers?
You know, I never really got into the Texas Chainsaw Massacre as much. Freddy's the favorite. Probably second, probably got to be the Michael Myers.
Michael Myers? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is just so creepy. Especially that first movie where it's just the subtle things of him, like, appearing behind a bush and then being gone. And you're just like, oh, God, that's scary.
Yeah, plus I like the Michael Myers mask more than I like the Jason mask.
Okay. Yeah, well, me and Jason is a hockey mask, and it's changed over the years. My still favorite Friday the 13th is Jason Takes Manhattan. I mean, that's just a fun scenario. Like, because he's always at Camp Crystal Lake or in the country, but he came to the biggest city on Earth, basically.
Not Jason in space?
Oh, that's Jason X.
Yeah.
I saw that in the theater. And he became like super like chrome and steel, which was really funny. But no, Jason Takes Manhattan. He's walking through a subway up, you know, apartments. Like, that was crazy and scary. So you never know. What about you?
Well, I already said Freddy, my favorite.
Well, Freddy, is it the first one that you like? Is it the second or third movie? Do you like Freddy versus Jason?
I always thought New Nightmare was really good.
Oh, so Wes Craven did the first movie, and then he did New Nightmare. It was all different directors in between.
I think New Nightmare is probably my favorite.
Because that was cool, because that kind of broke the fourth wall, where you actually, Wes Craven was writing a New Nightmare movie with the real actors who went by their real names, but Freddy came in and did that, which was really cool.
Cool spin on it all.
That was. I remember, how old was I? It was in the 90s, but so I was still in maybe high school or something, but that was really cool. And Halloween, I mean, first one's always really good. I liked with Halloween 3 where they did the anthology. Not, it wasn't an anthology. It was they did something different. Because after Halloween 1 and 2, in Halloween 3, Curse of the Witch, there was no Michael Myers in it. They did a completely different story. And it was actually really sadistic. It was about this company that would if they wore the mask and the kids ate their thing, or they wore the mask, I'm trying to remember, it would kill all the kids. This company wanted to kill every kid. And they wouldn't just pass out and die. It was, like, brutally murdered.
I've not seen that one.
You have not? You should see it, because there's no Michael Myers. There's no reference to him. It's completely different.
Wow.
Because, and they didn't go that way, because I guess what they wanted to do was do a Halloween series, sort of anthology of different, like, horror scenarios. But so many people were upset they didn't get Michael Myers that they went after Halloween 4.
Gotcha.
To Michael Myers stuff. So, yeah, Curse of the Witch, I have it. We need to watch it.
Okay, we'll watch that. Now, what about, so outside of slashers, as far as we're talking just, like, monsters, overall favorite monster, what would you guys say? If you had to pick one.
I mean, my mind goes to King Kong, because I just love King Kong so much, like King Kong, Godzilla.
Okay.
King Kong, for me, I mean, he's a movie monster, of course, but how they portrayed him is just so deep. I feel like, you know, he is the brute man, you know.
So you can identify with King Kong.
Yes, very, very much so.
Same hairy chest.
Harry's just like wild and all that stuff, and he falls in love with, like, the prettiest girl, and, like, she falls in love with him, but it can never be. Yeah. And, like, it's so sad. I still tear up every time I watch the 1933 original and the 2005 one.
Teared up during the Butterfly movie, too.
I did. Have you seen it yet? You would, too. You would. But King Kong, I mean, not so much the Jeff Bridges 1976 version of King Kong, but that character is just so good. And they're bringing it back, Kong Skull Island.
Yeah, it looks good.
So I hope it's good. And Godzilla's always fun. That's the Japanese thing. And it's just cool to see, like, a giant fucking lizard thing blowing fire everywhere, taking out people. That's just really cool.
Fucking up other big monsters.
I mean, the Matthew Broderick. Yeah, Mothra. I love it. It's a cool idea. It's like the kaiju thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
How about you? What's your favorite monster of all time?
Oh, man. I gotta go with the werewolf.
Which one?
Favorite werewolf, man. I probably gotta go with my favorite werewolf is probably the first Underworld werewolves.
Oh, okay.
And I always really dug those movies, but I remember watching the special features. And that was at a time when, you know, everybody was using digital effects for everything and trying to, like, build characters from scratch. And I was like, man, this just looks so good. And then I remember watching some special features and seeing people in the suits walking around outdoors, like practicing walking. And as soon as I realized that those were real suits and they actually made those, I was 10 times more into it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Practical goes a long way.
Yeah.
Like American Werewolf in London, it's so
that good. Whole transformation scene
yeah,
is
it's
amazing.
So good. Rick Baker, man, yeah. Right there. That was good. What about you? Alien Predator?
I'm going to go with the Xenomorph because to me that is the ultimate monster. It's just the design is so incredible. So, the H.R. Geiger thing and just amazing.
Yeah, how gothic and scary. It's like the things nightmares are because it's like pitch black. You can't see it. It moves super fast. It has that tongue. But then you really don't want to kill it. Because it's got hardcore acid for blood.
Yeah.
Because it will kill you, too.
It's just so inhuman. That's what's cool about this monster. Because very, you know, most of the time when you're talking about monsters, they relate to humans in some way.
Right.
But this one is just so very much its own thing. And the design is so different than anything else that was ever out at that time. It's just completely
amazing.
It's
really awful how they become them. It was, you know, it's the face huggers.
Yeah.
They lay the egg in you and it bursts open your chest. Yeah. Ooh.
And to me, what makes it scary is, you know, and I think one of the reasons why it's always been so popular is if you think about, you know, that monster, you know, humans are always, we've been at the top of the food chain for so long. And that monster is basically pure predator.
Yeah.
It's not like the big misunderstood Frankenstein monster or, you know, it literally is just there.
Yeah, you're just food you. Or and, just yeah. a place to lay its eggs.
You know, you're not faster, you're not stronger, you know.
You don't
have its predatory instincts that, you know, that are going to help you get away.
You're going to lose unless you're Ripley.
Yep.
Or Bill Paxton.
Or Bill Paxton, but he died too.
He did die too. Sad.
Ultimately, he lost.
I love it. It's so good. What about Jeff Goldblum's The Fly?
The Brundle Fly was really scary. Great monster there.
Yeah, that was that's a really good makeup too, and a scary character. Yes. Too. And that's somebody who's like seemed awesome, but a mad scientist sort of thing, and he just, you know, things didn't turn out for him.
Yeah. That was great. You know, honestly, some of my favorite monster stuff is the stuff from Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, man, the guy from Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth, or Hellboy stuff. That was all awesome.
That's great.
He's so good. He is. And one of the creepier monsters I've seen is from John Carpenter's The Thing, where the head comes off and the spider legs come out of the head.
Oh, yeah.
It, like, crawls around. Ooh, every time.
There were some really scary visuals in The Thing.
There was. And what would you classify Pennywise from It a monster? I guess that's an alien
totally.
Monster. Yeah. And still, that even though the show itself doesn't hold up, he does. Tim Curry as Pennywise holds up.
He does. I'm very interested in the remake they're doing.
Me too. I hope it's good. I hope they do it well. And I hope the guy fills Tim Curry's shoes.
They're large shoes to fill. They're large clown shoes to fill.
And when we're thinking of movie monsters, is there any animated movie monster that... Speaks
computer out. Generated or animated?
Animated, yeah. Computer generated, animated.
Oh man, I can't really think of anything off the top of my head. I can't, especially not animated.
Yeah. Okay. I was just curious if there was something like the only thing I think of is from Ferngully, and that's again Tim Curry, like the Nexus thing, and he was scary. But I'm trying to think of some.
I can think. Okay, so in the Lord of the Rings or the Hobbit cartoon, the Goblin King.
That's right.
In the Hobbit cartoon is really scary.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because there's a scene where all the dwarves come up and the Goblin King's getting ready to eat them.
Yeah.
And his jaw opens and he's just like really really scary with the music that came up. That scared the crap out of me when I was a kid.
Really?
And it's still creepy. I would still hesitate to show that if I had children. I would wait till they were pretty. A good deal older to show it to them because I think it's very scary.
Yeah, movie monsters are so much fun, and we keep getting new ones. Like we had the Babadook recently. We had like I don't even know if It Follows had one, but there was that.
It did because it was a creature. It was just
and you have the guy from the Hatchet movies, which are really good. He's like this big country bumpkin in overalls. I'm trying to remember what his name was. Oh. But it was good. Hatchet wanted to see it. And then you had, recently, Lights Out. You had this entity chick thing that was scaring people.
Yep.
I don't know. They keep making them. I'm going to keep seeing them.
Oh, yeah.
I want the next big...
Great monster in Stranger Things.
Yes, there was. There was a great monster in Stranger Things.
That thing's whole head's a mouth.
Yeah, like a Venus flytrap sort of thing. But I think what's cool about Stranger Things is that I think there's other things in the Upside Down or world that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I'm curious about like the slugs and everything. Like, does that turn into them, or is there something more to that? So that's always cool.
It was creepy that his whole thing was the mouth. Just like one big mouth.
Yeah, that was just awesome.
Just like Julia Roberts.
Just it looked exactly like Julia
one
Roberts.
One big mouth.
This one big mouth. Ugh, Julia Roberts. Why? Why are you here? Speaking of Julia Roberts, we're gonna get to sex scenes.
Yeah.
This is our final segment. These are our favorite, the best sex scenes we think in cinema. So
turn down the lights.
Turn down
Put
on the
that
lights.
Barry White.
Get some oils. Rub yourself.
Rub yourself. Rub a friend.
Let's get intimate. So we're going to talk about sex scenes in movies. There's tons of them. There's sex everywhere. Sex on TV now. It's everywhere. But it's been around a long time. And they're fun to watch sometimes if they're done well. So we're going to talk about the best ones that we think. I mean, they can be funny ones, they can be serious ones, they can be brutal ones.
Or just sexy.
Or just plain sexy. So, Jonathan Atterbury, I'm curious where your mind went for these best sex scenes.
I pulled up a little list, actually. I drew up a list of my favorite sex scenes. We're going to go through this here. I think the first one that came to mind is the sex scene in Liar Liar.
Here it is with Liar Liar. And this movie never escapes.
It may be my favorite movie of all time.
I don't even remember. So I think I've only seen it once or twice, so I don't remember really anything about it.
So I remember this is really riding him.
Yeah.
I don't remember the sex scene.
Okay, so for the most part, the one I'm thinking of was, it wasn't like an actual intercourse scene, but it was when the lawyer, the head lawyer for Fletcher's office was just coming on to him, and just he was trying to get on the phone with his family, and she was completely jacking his stuff.
What do you mean by jacking his stuff?
I mean that she was hopping on him, and she was very aggressive about it.
Okay.
But it was a hilarious scene.
So it was funny? Was it hot? Was it steamy?
It wasn't hot.
So it was just funny?
It was just funny.
Just how?
Yeah.
Super funny.
Okay. All right.
Just his reaction to the whole thing, him being ridiculous, it was perfect.
Okay. All right.
As far as, like, hot sex scenes go, I think that the sex scene with Eva Green in 300 Rise of an Empire was amazing.
Yes. No, absolutely. 100 billion percent. I remember that was, like, the one thing I liked. Well, I liked that movie, but that scene was
That movie
amazing.
Was all in all pretty
because
okay.
Because it was, like, they hated each other, but they also
it
wanted
was
to...
It was hot. Yeah. Like, there was some, like, you can tell that there was some real passion involved there between the two actors, like, the actors.
Because they were enemies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was a legitimately sexy scene.
She's so beautiful.
She is. She's gorgeous and very sexual. You can tell, just get that energy off of her.
That's a good one. Look at you.
I know, right? There's so many to go
through. I'm so... Give me one more.
One more. Okay, we're going to do Diary of a Nymphomaniac.
So, like, the six-hour movie with Shia LaBeouf.
Exactly. Okay. And you can really pick anything from that movie. Any of the sex scenes, because there are a lot of them.
I just want everybody to know, who's listening, that Jonathan Atterbury picked a Lars Van Trier's movie for his best sex scene. Which, yes, it's not Antichrist, but it is...
Yeah, I mean, Antichrist also has some gnarly stuff
it
in
does.
It, as far as sex scenes are concerned. But this one was just... I think for... This one's going to be more the ones that stick with you, you know, and there's so many things in that movie, so many different scenes that just kind of leave you with a very distinct impression where you're just like, whoa, it's kind of a feeling that sticks with you. Everything about that movie, but so many of the I think those sex scenes were the first time that I've ever found sex to be, like, unsexy, you know what I mean? Because it's such a damaging, bad thing
because
for this character.
Because a lot of people in real life, sex is not sexy like they portray in the movies.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like that at all. And so this character, I mean, they did have some very sexy stuff in there, but a lot of it was like, oh, holy shit, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
Just seeing how much it destroys that character's life.
Right. Yeah, I totally, yeah. The best we can hope for is behind, like, a Safeway. in a Dodge Stratus. Jeremy, I'm curious. Is there any superhero sex you like?
Superhero sex specifically?
No, I don't know. No, I'm just... Anything that
well,
comes to mind for
there
you.
Was a pretty good scene in the Watchmen movie.
There was!
Oh, yeah!
Two, oh my God, which was just... To Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah in their spaceship. That was really funny.
In the little owl ship.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
That was the good one. Another one that comes to mind actually is the first 300.
Okay.
That's got a pretty good one.
Between Cersei and Leonidas.
Yeah. That was good.
That's a good one.
Queen Gorgo.
I think, though, I got to probably give my all-time favorite one. I got to go with Basic Instinct.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
Which one? Which scene from that? I can't think of this. The whole scene?
Okay. The whole movie's a sex scene. Jeremy uncrosses his legs sometimes.
That's where he got it from. Yep, just emulating Sharon Stone.
That's kind of a scary one, too.
Yeah, a little
you
bit.
You never know. Yeah, Sharon Stone, that was when she was doing all that kind of stuff. Sliver and Basic Instinct.
It was the beginning of all of that goodness.
That was. I remember.
She was hot, too.
They kind of remade Basic Instinct, or they did, like, a blatant ripoff with Madonna and Willem Dafoe, and it was called Body of Evidence.
Oh, yeah, they did, didn't they?
And Madonna got full frontal and all that good shit, too. I remember that. It was Willem Dafoe. It was really funny.
Willem Dafoe gets naked.
Yes, he does. He doesn't give a shit.
He got naked in Antichrist.
Yeah, well, yeah. That was some hardcore stuff.
Some lots of naked there.
Yes. Just watch that scene on loop. And you know what scene I'm talking about, listeners. You do. I got a couple.
Okay, let's hear your list. I'm really interested.
You're really interested, huh? All right, so I've got to say the movie Secretary.
Oh.
Not Secretariat.
With Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Not the horse one. Yeah, but yeah, James Spader and Maggie Gyllenhaal. That's a whole other podcast right there. Not to be confused with Secretariat. No, Secretary. That movie just, the fetishes and the bondage and like having just so sexy. Because I think there's, you know, something in where you work with somebody or... a secretary fantasy. And
it was just, 50 Shades of Grey before 50 Shades of Grey.
But it was like a hardcore 50 Shades of Grey, and yeah, much better.
And the spanking scene, that was pretty sexy.
Yeah, no, yeah, it was damn good. So that always comes to mind, because I remember seeing that in the theaters, like, that was damn good. And, oh, James Spader, he's so amazing. I've got to say, which I think my younger self would have liked, but Almost Famous, the scene where the kid reporter gets all the groupies at once.
Oh, they deflower him.
Yeah, right? Which was awesome, because you're on tour with a really cool rock band in a hotel, and all these really hot chicks who are a little older than you, like, we're going to have fun tonight. And
every teenage boy's dream, let's be honest.
I think it was also sweet because he just looked at Penny Lane because he loved her, right, which was cool, too. What else do I've got in here? One of my favorites, of course, which I think is maybe the best film sex scene, is Team America. World Police. It's got everything you ever want in a sex scene.
It's got poop.
It's got pee, poop. It's got everything. Not anatomically correct dolls. And it's amazing. It starts out very sensual, and then it just goes.
And goes
to
and
dark
goes
places. There's another one which I thought find really funny. It's not sexy at all, but American Psycho, where Patrick Bateman
is flexing in the mirror.
He's flexing, watching the show, and then the thing happens. But yeah, he's doing that, and it's just so funny to me. But that's a really powerful sex scene, I think. Showgirls with Elizabeth Berkley in the pool.
Yeah.
That was so hot.
That was a hot sex scene.
Oh, my God. A lot of people would think, like, Wild Things, you know, with the lesbian one.
Neve Campbell and
Denise Richards.
Denise Richards. Yeah.
But I go Showgirls. Black Swan between Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman. That was a really hot, very sexualized, mm-hmm, and creepy one. And then Eyes Wide Shut, of course, because my favorite movie is almost Eyes Wide Shut.
Almost Eyes Wide Shut?
Army of Darkness takes sequel? Over it, but it's Eyes Wide Shut. I love Eyes Wide Shut. And it's
all
just,
Eyes Wide Shut is needs a chainsaw arm and he'd have been done.
There's an idea, you know, for a remake. Eyes Wide Shut with a chainsaw,
you know,
arm.
For creepy ones, though, if you've ever seen the Old Boy movie...
Old Boy, yes.
That is it, because it's like the hot sex scene. Have you seen that movie?
Mm-mm.
And then the way it ends,
it's a Korean movie.
You're just like, fuck.
Yeah, it's damn good.
Oh, you
Old Boy,
the original one?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I haven't seen the original one. I watched the remake.
Oh, so you watched the Spike Lee one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I have the original one. It's Korean. It's amazing. It's
okay.
Really good.
I'll watch it.
The violence in it's awesome.
It is really
good. Sign me
up. Yeah, so there's like tons of sex scenes that are comedy like Team America, or there's really sexual ones like Showgirls or Secretary or any of the other ones you mentioned. We would like to hear what your favorite sex scene in a movie is.
Yeah, whether it makes you laugh or gives you a boner. Let us know.
Yeah, I mean, it could be Brown Bunny with Chloe 70, where she literally performed fellatio, literally on screen. But yeah, it could involve vampires. It could involve anything. I mean, there is a lot of sex on True Blood. You never know. But let us know on our Facebook page and on our Twitter. media_Ocrity. And we're just about done with our show. I feel it's a good show. And next week we're definitely recasting 7.
Unless
on episode 8. We are not going to forget, because I'm very excited about this, because I have some already good people in mind for that. But
can't be Kevin Hart. You're
so
not allowed to use Kevin
Hart. So you're
giving
Hart. Me a rule now? I
yes.
can't cast Kevin Hart in every role?
Or Cuba Gooding Jr. Because I know
radio,
you lean back on them.
Radio and Gilbert Grape Smothers is where I always go to. That's what I want them in everything. But that's Mediocrity, episode 7. It was fun, guys.
It was fun, yeah. Good show.
We talked movie monsters. We had a few laughs.
Star Trek.
And
sexy.
And sex. Sex things. Oh, my God. Sex in Star Trek with monsters. We need to write it.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week. Mediocrity.